Well, one day, his daughter finally grew up. He took care of her. He never wanted her to leave the house because he didn't think anyone was good enough to marry his daughter. When she went to college, he was very careful. When she would come home, she stayed at home. She never went to see anybody because he did not want to take a chance on her marrying someone and leaving home. Well, her best friend was going to have a party, a dance. So she invited the young girl to come to the house, and she said, "Now, I've got this man, this young boy from Duke University, and I want you to meet him because he is a young medical student, and he is just perfect for you." Well, they didn't tell the girl's daddy, so she was able to go to the dance. He knew nothing about the boy her to meet. She met the young man, and he started really liking her a lot, and they began meeting each other kind of secretly. Finally, he told her, he said, "I cannot leave you." He said, "I've just got to marry you. I want you to be my wife." He went to the house one day to ask her father for his permission to marry her. Voices were raised. He wasn't about to give his daughter away because the young man was not good enough. And the young man left the room where her father was. The girl walked out the door with him. And he told her, he said, "Your father said no, he would not have it." Well, they kissed goodbye. The boy walked down the walkway into the driveway, got in his car, and left. Well, a few days later, he came back again to ask the father again if he couldn't possibly maybe change his mind. The boy left the house that night. The girl kissed him goodbye. But he never did return. He never got back to Duke University. He was never seen again. His folks came to the house to ask the girl if she knew anything about where he was. The authorities came and no one had seen him. Years went by. The girl couldn't eat and she couldn't sleep. She was just distraught. But she was able to survive. And finally her daddy died. And when he died, he was buried. And that year, the housekeeper went out to the orchard to pick apples. There was one tree of golden delicious apples, and they were just beautiful. She picked them, took them back in the house. And when she cut the golden delicious apples, the apples were streaked with red inside. Every apple on that tree, when they were cut open, was streaked with red. No one used the apples because they felt like they were ruined. There was something wrong with them. The tree grew, and it finally died. They had to cut it down. When they cut down the tree, they noticed that the ground was still soft. It had never hardened around the tree. And as they dug up the tree, they found remains of bones that had been planted beside that tree. The folks who lived around that house in that community claimed, they often wonder, was it the boy, the young student from Duke University, that was never seen again? No one will ever know really what happened in that tree, but the tree was ruined. And that is supposed to be a true ghost story. But there was another one up there in North Carolina about an old conductor. His name was Joe Baldwin. And he was on the Atlantic Coast Line Railroad, and the Atlantic Coast Line Railroad ran from that time from Wilmington, North Carolina, down to Florence, our hometown, down here to Jacksonville. Well, Joe Baldwin had looked at his watch. This was back in the late 1800s. He looked at his watch, and it was about 2 minutes before midnight. And he decided he would pick up his lantern and go through the train and let people know they were coming into Wilmington. And as the train pulled into it, was going towards Wilmington, Joe Baldwin was on the platform of his car. His foot stopped right in midair because his train had come uncoupled from the rest of the train, his coach, and it was going backwards, downhill. And Joe knew he would never get out of that alive. He knew that he was doomed. He ran, made his way back to the back of the train and stood on the back platform. Another train was coming. He picked up his lantern and he began waving the lantern back and forth. And the train stopped. They saw his lantern because that was a sign that there was danger ahead. But Joe's coach could not stop. It ran into the train. And during the wreck, his head was severed. And they never found his head. Some folks who saw the wreck happen claim that for several minutes after the wreck, they still saw a sign. The lantern going back and forth, back and forth. And a young couple coming up the track the next night said they saw the same thing again. A lantern, a light, going back and forth. And when they got up to it, it disappeared. I have a friend who saw it, who actually has seen the light at Mako Station. She says it's very strange that you walk right up to the light and there's nothing there, there's no one there. And it just backs away and disappears. The Army sent up sharpshooters from Fort Bragg, North Carolina, to shoot it out, but they couldn't do it. They couldn't kill it. No one knows what causes that light. Now, scientists claim it's an atmospheric condition. The folks who live around Mako Station claim. Oh, and also the Mako Station had to change the colors of the light, the signal lights, because engineers would mistake Joe's light for the railroad lights. The folks who live around Mako, the scientists claim it's an atmospheric condition. But the folks who live around Mako Station claim it's really Joe Baldwin looking for his head. We have a storyteller back here who is about to leave, but I don't think he's... Well, he didn't hear me. I thought maybe... Do any of you have a story you would like to tell? Does anyone come in and have a story they'd like to tell? It was mean. He was the meanest man you've ever seen. He was so mean... He liked to take the fleas off of dogs and put them on his wife and sit back and laugh at him. He was watching her scratch. But he was a good blacksmith. He would blacksmith all the time. One day he was just a blacksmith in a way. And all of a sudden this old man walked up to him. His name was John. The blacksmith's name was John. And people called him Wicked John because he was so mean. This old man was all bent over, had a long white beard, and he had a stick with him and walked in, and John said, "Howdy, stranger, come on in and have a set of spell. Would you like some victuals?" Old man nodded, and so old John went back in the kitchen and got him a big plate of collard greens, some buttermilk and cornbread. Said, "Now you eat them up, old fella, and just enjoy resting." So the old man commenced to eating his victuals. Well, old John went on back to blacksmith, and all of a sudden, he looked up, and the old man that was all bent over was standing straight up. He said, "Mister, you playing a trick on me, but you ain't an old man. John, I got something to tell you. I'm really St. Peter, and I come down here once a year, and I find somebody who's good, who does good things, and I give them three wishes. John said, oh, now, and John just thought he was a little bit kooky because he'd never heard of anything like that. I mean, that just wasn't possible. But he went along with him. He said, oh, is that right? He said, yep, John, now, you got three wishes. What three wishes would you like to have? John said, well, see that chair over there? That's my favorite rocker. Now, those young folks come in here, though, they're coming in, they're sat in that rocker, and I can't sit in it when I'm tired. I want the next person that sits in that chair for it to bam them on the head and rock and rock and bam them until I tell it to stop. Oh, John, you done wasted a good wish. That's a shame you wasted that wish, but all right, that's one wish. You got two more to go. He said, see that hammer? That's my favorite hammer over there. But those youngins come up here, those little boys, they go out there and they hit caps with them. And they just about ruined my hammer. I want the next person that picks up that hammer, I want it to bang them around on it until I tell it to stop. John, John, you done wasted two good wishes. John, now look, you got one more wish. Make it a good one. Well, you see that bush out there? That's my favorite bush. It's a sticky bush. But those old fancy women, they come up and they tether their horses at it, and they just about ruin it. I want the next person that touches my tree, my bush, I want it to grab them and stick them and not let them go until I tell it to. Oh, John, you just done wasted three good wishes. Okay, you got them. So the old man started out the door, and the minute he got in front of the door, all of a sudden, he just plumb disappeared. Well, John didn't understand all that. Well, that night, he was talking to the old woman, and he was lazy, too. He wouldn't ever help his wife around the house. She said, John, come on in here and help me with my dishes. He said, woman, I'm too tired. I can't help you with them dishes. And the old woman started fussing at him. She said, John, you are so mean. I just wish the old devil would come up here and get you. Ain't nobody going to come get me, woman. Now you just shut your mouth and do your work and let me rest. The next day when John went into his shop, he started smelling kind of a bad odor, a foul sound, odor coming in the door. He happened to look up, and that standing in the door was a little bitty devil. Cutest little devil you ever did see. He had a little red suit on, and a little teeny tiny horn sticking up, and a teeny tiny little tail, and he was just a cute little old fella. And John said, what you want, boy? Howdy, Mr. John. Daddy's ready for you. What you talking about, boy? Daddy ready for you. Come on, John, he ready. Huh? Oh, you, listen, I ain't got time right now. Listen, Mr. John, now my daddy gets mad. You don't want him to get mad and throw that hot breath on you. Now you come on, daddy ready. Well, I tell you what, boy, you sit up there in that rocking chair, and I, let me finish this horseshoe first. Yes, sir, Mr. John. Little old devil, he jumps up in the rocking chair, and that old rocking chair commenced to rock, and he rocked. He said, oh, my little tail. Ow, ow, ooh, ooh, ooh. He got my tail. Ooh, Mr. John, stop this rocking chair. And you, little devil, you ain't going to bother me no. Mr. John, I never want to see you again. Stop, rocking chair. Chair stop. Little devil got out of that chair, and he just disappeared into nowhere. Well, the next day, old John, that night, John went back home again, and he was tired. And the old woman got fussing at him again. She said, John, you ain't picked up none of your clothes. Go pick up all them dirty clothes you just took off. Pick them up, woman. That's what I married you for. Now you pick up all them clothes yourself. I ain't going to pick up nothing. Get to work. John, you are so mean the devil's going to come get you. He already tried one time. He ain't going to come get me. Well, he goes back to work the next day. He's a hammering, and all of a sudden, he smells something a little bit stronger. Ooh, it was a foul odor. He looked up in the doorway, and there was a little middle-sized little devil standing there. Boy, he was bigger, and his little horn, little ears had turned into horns now. And he had a longer tail. Mr. John, Daddy's ready for you. Listen, little boy, little devil, I ain't got time right now. Listen here, Mr. John, my daddy's mad at you. You better come on and go now because you don't want to get my daddy mad. Get my daddy mad, you're going to be really sorry. Come on, Mr. John. My daddy was up all night long trying to help my poor little boy, my little brother. He was so mending his little tail because it got squished in your old rocking chair. Now, well, little, I tell you what, little boy, little Deborah, you pick up that hammer. Hand me that little hammer. I need a hammer. And then we'll go after I finish with this horseshoe. Yes, sir, Mr. John. Little boy picked up that hammer, and that old hammer started banging and a-banging and a-bumping and a-bumping and a-bumping all over that little boy, just a-hammering him all over the place. Ow, Mr. John, ow, ow, stop that hammer, Mr. John. Little devil, you gonna bother me anymore? No, Mr. John, I never want to see you again. Hammer stopped. Well, then old John, the next night, he goes back in, and the old woman was chasing around the house with a frying pan. She says, John, you so mean. Come back here. Let me hit you on the head with it. John wouldn't come back. He finally got to bed. Next morning, he goes into work. He's a-hammering. All of a sudden, the worst smell comes in. It is the worst smell you can imagine. He never smelled anything so bad. He looked up, and there standing in the door was a big boy himself. That old boy standing right there, longest old bat, red fella you ever saw, with long old red horns, long old tail, and the fire just coming out of his mouth, and his eyes just red. John, come on. I've been up all night putting all them bumps out of my little boy's head and his body that you hammered on last night. Come on, John, I'm ready for you now. Don't make me any mad. Mr. Devil, John, don't you give me no trouble now. You come on. Mr. Devil, well, listen, whatever you do, don't hit me. Don't bother my bush out there. That's my favorite bush. It's your favorite bush. Well, let me go get a hickory, and I'm going to hit you a few times. The old devil went over there to grab it, a stick from his favorite bush, and all of a sudden that sticky bush grabbed the old man, and he stuck him and stuck that old devil, and that old devil was yelling and screaming and yelling and screaming. He said, John said, devil, are you going to leave me alone? Yeah, John, just let me go, let me go. So old John said, all right, stop, let him go. Old devil jumped up, and he ran out. Back to where he came from. Well, old John lived a few more years. Finally, he died. He went on up to heaven. He's knocked on the pearly gates. Knocked on the pearly gates. St. Peter saw him. He said, John, we ain't got room for you in here. You ain't coming in here. But St. Peter, I'm ready to come now. I'm ready. Nope, you missed your chance. You can't come now. We ain't got room for you. We don't want you. You're too mean. Where am I going to go? Well, I tell you what, John. You go down the road a while and see if you can't find somewhere down there to go. They might let you in. So old John goes on down the road about, and little devil's looking out the window and says, Daddy, 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 here comes old wicked John. Daddy, Daddy, quick, Daddy, Daddy, here comes John. Old devil says, quick, boys, lock up the windows, lock up the door. Don't let that old man in here. He's too mean. He's too mean. Don't let him in here. Sure enough, they locked up all the windows and the doors and all. And old John comes in. Hi, devil. I'm ready to come. I'm ready to come in. You ain't coming in here, John. You're too mean. But devil, I got to go somewhere. I'd already been to other. They won't let me in the other place. Well, I tell you what, John. Here. Old devil reaches back and gives him a big old piece of red fiery coal and gives it to John. He says, here, John. You take this and go way down the road and start a place of your own. Thank you. Do you have a short story that you like?
Yeah, mine runs about 2 minutes.
Okay, that's enough time. And tell us who you are. And we have to stop at 12:30 because we have another storyteller if he's here.
Hi, my name is Sue Smith. I'm from Tallahassee, and I'd like to tell you a story from Turkey. It's about a little boy named Mustafa. Mustafa is about 9 years old, and like some nine-year-olds, he had a little trouble remembering things. You ever have trouble remembering things? Yeah. Well, Mustafa worked as a servant for a rich man. One day, the rich man called him over. He said, Mustafa, yes, master? I need some salt. I want you to go to the village for me. Buy me some salt. Oh, yes, sir. I'll do that. Now, what do you need to get? Salt, sir. Now, don't you forget this time. Oh, no, sir. I won't forget. So Mustafa started off for the village, and he thought of a plan to help himself remember what he was supposed to buy. He said, I'll just say it to myself the whole way there. So he said to himself, salt, 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 salt. But of course, he lived in Turkey. And in Turkey, they have a different word for salt. What he said was hinch. So he's walking along the road saying hinch, hinch, hinch. Pretty soon, he came to a bridge. And there was a man fishing from the bridge. He'd been there since morning. He'd caught quite a few fish, but for the last little while, he hadn't been catching anything. And then he heard Mustafa come by saying, heech, heech, heech. Well, now there's a funny thing about the Turkish language, and that is that that word heech, it can mean salt, but it can also mean nothing. The fisherman got all excited. What are you doing coming along saying heech, heech, heech? You're talking about nothing. That's exactly what I've been catching. Nothing. He said, oh, good sir, what should I say? He said, well, you should say, maybe many more. And Mustafa said, oh, yes, good sir, that is what I will say. May there be many more. So Mustafa started down the road, and now instead of saying heech to himself, he was saying, may there be many more. May there be many more. Came to a group of people. They were walking along very quietly, head bent down. He noticed that six of them in the back were carrying a casket. It was a funeral. And he was still saying to himself, may there be many more. May there be many more. And the people from the funeral were horrified. How can you say such a dreadful thing? Mustafa said, oh, kind sirs, what should I say? You should say, may he rest in peace. Yes, kind sirs, that is what I will say. May he rest in peace. But he waited for the funeral to go on by, and then he started walking down the road, saying to himself, may he rest in peace. May he rest in peace. Pretty soon, he noticed something over by the side of the road. Look at it. Lots of flies buzzing around. It was a dead fish. And Mustafa was saying, may he rest in peace. May he rest in peace. A passerby gave him a funny look. Like, what are you talking about? May he rest in peace. Oh, good sir, well, what should I say? You should say, ooh, what a smell. Yes, kind sir, that is what I will say. Ooh, what a smell. Ooh, what a smell. And he walked on. He came to three beautiful young ladies walking down the road. They had on their pretty veils and their turned-up slippers, and they were mincing along delicately until they heard Mustafa saying, ooh, what a smell. Ooh, what a smell. It's a good thing for Mustafa that those slippers were made of soft leather, because they pulled him off and started banging him on the head. He said, wait, wait, ladies, wait. Well, you should not say things like that. Oh, ladies, what should I say? You should say, oh, how wonderful. My, how nice. Yes, good ladies, that's what I will say. Oh, how wonderful. My, how nice. So he went down the road. Pretty soon ahead of him, he could hear a couple of men. They were yelling at one another, and voices kept getting louder and louder. And just as Mustafa walked up, the first man hit the second man. And Mustafa said, oh, how wonderful. Second man hit the first man. And Mustafa said, my, how nice. And then they both turned on him. What are you talking about? Well, what's the matter? You shouldn't say things like that. Well, kind sirs, what should I say? You should say, I'm forgetting. Okay. You should say, please, kind sirs, stop fighting. Yes, that is what I will say. Please, kind sirs, stop fighting. Well, they took his advice and walked off, arm in arm. And he continued down the road. Please, kind sirs, stop fighting. He came to a pair of dogs. And they were going at one another, growling, barking, biting. And he's saying, please, kind sirs, stop fighting. The man walked by and said, you won't get very far telling them. Oh, well, what should I say? You should say, get out, you dirty dog. So Mustafa said, oh, that is what I will say. Get out, you dirty dog. The dogs turned tail and ran. Then they continued on into town, and at the edge of town, he came to a cobbler's shop. Mam's there sewing on some leather slippers. And Mustafa walked up to watch him, still saying to himself, "Get out, you dirty dog. Get out, you dirty dog." The cobbler thought he was talking to him. "Mustafa, what are you saying that for?" Oh, I didn't mean you. Well, what should I say?" And the cobbler said, "Well, if you can't think of anything better than that to say, you should say nothing." So Mustafa said, "Oh, Kunzur, that is what I will say. Nothing, nothing, nothing." Which, of course, in Turkish is "heech, heech, heech." And by that time, he was at the market, and when he wondered what he needed to buy, he heard himself saying "heech," which means salt. So he purchased his salt and carried it straight home, and everyone was happy.
I don't know how they got me in here, but before I knew it, I got in here like it was when I got married. I used to go see this little girl. I was just sort of playing around, having a good time. She's playing for keeps. I woke up one morning married. Next time I'm going to be more careful. I don't have much to talk about today, only I'd like to sort of comment on the times today that, and how different it was when I was a child. I was born and raised down the state below Kissimmee in an orange grove. And there was nothing there but just woods and orange groves. The only two jobs there were there, you could either be a cowboy or you could work in an orange grove. And I didn't like either one. So I left there in 25. I come here to seek my fortune. I found it right in the middle of a depression. I like starved to death. But anyhow, I made it. I also think about the old times, the old countries, and country places down home, where all day long you wouldn't see it, you even see your neighbor sometimes. People live so far apart that you might hear your neighbor chopping wood for cook supper through the woods. And there was no way for any outlet, much except having a square dance or maybe a picnic. That was the greatest things that ever happened around there to us. Today, you wouldn't think about it, but we looked upon it as something great. And I remember one picnic we went to. They used to have, we didn't even have a church. We did have a schoolhouse, though. And sometimes they would have preaching at the church, at the schoolhouse. And they had, in those days, traveling preachers. Preacher would have a horse and buggy, and he'd just travel the countryside around. Wherever he found a farmhouse, he'd stop, have services, get something to eat. And if he was able to get there late in the afternoon, they'd put up his horse and buggy for him. He'd start out the next day on his rounds. So one day he was coming through our section, and some of the ladies thought it would be a great thing if we could have a picnic at the old schoolhouse, and then he could deliver a sermon there. It would work out, real nice. So the ladies all baked cakes. They had a devil food cake, they had an angel food cake, chocolate cakes, baked beans and potato salad, like for just a regular picnic. And so they went down there, and they had a couple old tables set off under the trees at the side of this building, just a one-room little frame house, all the graves was in one room. So they went there and cooked their pies and cakes and put them out there, set them all out there. And they spread clean bed sheets over them to keep the insects from getting on the cakes and one stuff or another. Some of the ladies baked made a bowl of punch. Well, all we had to make punch with was grapefruit and orange juice and lemons and stuff like that that we had growing around there. We couldn't go down to the store and buy something to put in it. But they mixed it all up with grapefruit and orange juice, and they sprinkled in there some powdered coconut, stirred it up. I think they put some kind of extracts in it. I don't know how you could drink it, but anyhow, they had a big bowl of it up there, and they covered it all over. And the preacher was late. We'd all stand around there waiting for the preacher. The preacher was about a half or three quarters of an hour late before he drove up in a nice black horse and looked like a brand new buggy. And of course, when he drove up there, some of the boys went and got his horse, buggy, and took it off down with the rest of them under the trees and tied him up in the shade, put a feed bag on him and let him eat. Well, we started eat. He uncovered the table and everybody was enjoying the baked beans and tater salads and one stuff another. And I wondered why they had a devil's food cake and an angel food cake. Well, but this is supposed to be a church gathering. The devil's food cake got eat up before the angel food cake got. I ain't figured that out yet. But anyhow, the preacher, he went and got him a fruit jar. That's all they had to drink out of. Got him some punch. He tasted that. But what he didn't know, somebody slipped around there and poured a pint of moonshine in it. And nobody knew it except who done it. I don't know who done it. But anyhow, the preacher, he took a sip of that. He said, "That's mighty good punch. I want to congratulate the ladies who made this punch." He drank some more. Now, this is true. So they're all eating and having a big time. And I was just a girl and boy. But anyhow, I was enjoying it. It was something different from the regular routine that we have every day around there. And after a while, they decided they had all they wanted to eat, and the preacher was still drinking punch. So they went in, and he delivered his sermon. And he preached his sermon was based on love your neighbor. And some of the old people that knew him a long time said he preached one of the best sermons they ever heard him preach in his life. And, well, everything went along fine. But somebody, and I don't know who, went down there where the horses were. We didn't have automobiles. We had a horse and buggy. You either walked or rode a mule, or what have you, whatever you had, but we didn't have not a soul owned an automobile out there. And when he went out there, somebody had unhitched his horse, took him out, turned him around, and put him wrong side in the shafts. Well, we thought it was funny. But now that preacher preached his sermon all love, but he changed his mind when he found his horse turned around backwards. Several of us eat off the mantelpiece for a while. But it's a wonderful place down there to think back. It's the memories of your childhood at a place like that is really good. We were free, and we all went to this schoolhouse from the first grade to the eighth. That's as high as it went. That's about all the education you needed then. If you write your name and count your money, is all you needed. Of course, your name did not much in those days. And you didn't have much money to count. But anyhow, that's far as they went. But I often think about it when I was a boy, how different it is today. We couldn't run down to the drugstore or the grocery store whenever we wanted something to drink or eat. We had to go to town once a month. That's when Dad got paid. He got $30 a month to feed us young'uns on. And we had, of course, we had a garden that we could grow most of our vegetables, but staple goods and coffee and meal and stuff like that, they'd go to town once a month. That was a great day. And drive 17 miles in a horse and wagon, loaded up with stuff and come home, you'd done a day's work. Nowadays, they drive that 17 miles in about 20 minutes. And they do it if they don't want much more than a loaf of bread sometime. But in those days, it wasn't that way. It was hard. We didn't have electric lights. We didn't have running water. None of that. Our house, all it had in it was a bed and a table to put the light on. Kitchen with a stove and something to eat on, a table to eat off of. But we got along. But I often want to go back and live those days again. It was a whole lot different in having to fight taxes, traffic, dodge the cop now and then. I remember when I was a young fella, I used to go courting once in a while and I got pretty well up. And I had to go in a horse and buggy. Well, when I come up to Jacksonville, I bought me an old Model T Ford Roadster. Well, I was still going courting. So I got my old gal, we were driving around town. Those days they didn't have traffic lights and they had the cops, police at all the busy corners directing traffic. I had my arm on, come around there. He said, "Hey, both hands there." I said, "I can't, I got to have one hand to drive with." But anyhow, it was better before I came up here. When I was courting in a horse and buggy, I could wrap the reins around the dashboard and use both hands. So and the horse wouldn't run off the road. He didn't. In other words, he didn't care what went on back then. But I liked it better then. It wasn't so hard on your nerves. But a person don't stay a boy all of his life. All children have a bad habit of growing up. I was one of them. I used to hunt and fish down there. That was my greatest outlet, to hunting and fishing. And, I lived sort of like a Tom Sawyer. They lived on a lake. Anybody that's been down around the middle part of the state, around Orlando and Kissimmee, will know that Kissimmee's right on a big lake called Lake Tahokaliga. You can go from that lake right on down to the Gulf of Mexico through the canals and fish all you want to. I used to fish. I went out there one morning, I know. It was awful foggy. Well, I rode a little old rowboat out a little ways and started catching perch. They were biting good. And it kept getting foggier, and it got so confounded foggy after a while you just couldn't see. In fact, I had a half a dozen fish in the boat, and the fog was so thick they swam out. And you could fish overhead and catch fish. That's how thick the fog was. I wouldn't like it. Blowing sizzle and test. I had a friend down there when I left. I thought a lot of him. I went down to see him one day. That's long years ago. And he lived out in the country. He had a five-room house. And so nothing would do him, but I had to spend the night with him. Well, he only had a little two-bedroom house. And he had a wife and a little boy. He told me I could share the room with the little boy. That night we went to go to bed, little boy and I went up to the room. I looked over there and he was on his knees, his head's down on the mattress. I think to myself, well, if that little boy is man enough to say his prayers, I'll say mine too. So I got on the opposite side of the bed and got on my hands, on my knees. Little boy said, "What are you doing?" I said, "I'm doing the same thing you are." "Boy," he said, "Mama's going to be mad. The pot is on this side of the bed." Somehow or another, I was always in trouble. But It's wonderful to think of them old times. And mosquitoes, I'm telling you, I like to forget that. We had no screens in the old house. Couldn't afford them. At night, you had to raise the window to get some breath. But they had mosquito nets. They don't have them anymore. But they used to hang over the bed and drape over it like cheesecloth, you know, to keep the mosquitoes out. So I was sleeping under that at my sister's place. And two mosquitoes called under there now and pulled me off the bed. One of them says, "Should we eat him here or take him outside?" The other said, "Let's eat him here, because if we take him out there, then big one's going to take him away from us." But it was fun. We fished many times. And, of course, you caught a fish, you eat it. Fish and chicken was our main meat. We couldn't go buy us a steak or a pork chop. We had to use what we had. And we used our garden for vegetables. And we made out. I was sort of proud of it. In my young life, and I wouldn't take a putty for it. But I went down. My sister had a place down there where the old home site was. When we all left, she's the only one that stayed down there on the farm. And her old cow fell in the well one day. In the old times, they dug a well and you'd pull the water up with a bucket. You didn't have running water because we couldn't buy the pipes to put in there. But anyhow, that was an old abandoned well down there. Her cow fell in there. Well, she didn't know how to get it out. Now, when I got down there, my sister was all worked up about it, told me about it. I said, "Well, that's no problem. You say she's the best milk cow in the country." So I got her and went down there and started milking. I just kept on milking. You know, I floated that old cow right out of that milk. There wasn't nothing to it. But a lot of people didn't see things that way. And I had a little farm down there. I stayed there for about 10 years and worked hard. And the only thing I had